Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified,
great.
Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are taking on perhaps the most intellectually elusive and, let's be honest, universally messy subject of all.
Yeah.
Love.
Yeah.
We are diving into Ronald de Souza's philosophical examination, Love. A very short introduction, and spoiler alert, it is not a Hallmark card.
No, definitely not. If you came here looking for easy answers, you are probably going to be disappointed.
Really?
So Asisa argues that love isn't a simple emotion you just fall into. He actually defines it as a paradoxical and complex syndrome.
Oh, syndrome.
Yeah. And so our mission here is to move beyond the usual romantic cliches and also beyond the purely biological, you know, it's all chemicals argument. We want to give you a genuine intellectual toolkit for really analyzing what love is.
I have to say, that concept of a syndrome is arresting. We celebrate love as this highest human value, the most beautiful thing we experience. But he frames it with a word we usually use for medical conditions.
Right.
Is he, I don't know, risking pathologizing the very thing we hold sacred?
That is the intellectual challenge he sets up right away. And no, he's not saying love is an illness. He uses the term syndrome very precisely because love is a cluster of symptoms.
Symptoms.
Think about it. Desires, hormonal rushes, feelings, rational commitments, behaviors, they all occur together, but there's no single simple definition that captures all of it.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And he believes that getting some intellectual clarity about this complexity is essential if we actually want to understand our own relationships.
Okay, so let's establish who our guide is on this, Ronald de Souza. What makes him the philosopher uniquely equipped to navigate this deeply emotional terrain?
Well, de Souza is a distinguished Canadian-American philosopher. He's a professor emeritus at the University of Toronto, and he specializes in the philosophy of mind and emotions.
Right. And crucially, he spent decades pushing back against that traditional Western idea of splitting reason and feeling.
And that defining pushback came with his 1987 book, The Rationality of Emotion. That was huge. Most philosophy before that saw emotions as interruptions to reason.
Exactly. As noise.
But de Souza argues that emotions have their own kind of rationality. They help us prioritize what matters. They focus our attention in a really complex world.
That's it. And he integrates that analytical philosophy with modern science, neuroscience, evolutionary biology. But he also draws heavily from history and literature.
So he's coming at it from all angles.
All angles. It makes him uniquely qualified to sort of dissect the mechanics of love without, as he puts it, disenchanting its mystery. He wants us to understand what we're doing when we love, not give us relationship advice on how to do it.
So let's get into the central thesis of the book then. If love is this complex syndrome, what are the primary components he's talking about?
The main components are, well, three things. There's biological programming, psychological states, and maybe most powerfully, cultural narratives.
Okay.
The book's core insight is that love isn't something we passively experience. It's not just triggered by chemicals. It is actively learned and structured by our environment.
And this is where we hit on one of the book's most important concepts, right? The paradigm scenarios.
Right. We don't experience love in a vacuum. We absorb these scripts, the paradigm scenarios, from our culture.
Through myths, from movies.
Exactly. Literature, history. These scripts teach us what love should feel like, what behaviors are appropriate, and what the emotional arc has to be. You know, the script of the one or the script that says true passion has to involve intense suffering.
So we're not just feeling things. We're constantly measuring our own experience against these templates we've got stored in our heads.
Precisely.
It suggests that if, say, Romeo and Juliet were born in 1950s suburbia instead of Renaissance Verona, their feelings would have looked totally different.
Totally different. Even if their underlying brain chemistry was identical, the raw biological materials are constant, but the meaning, the structure, and the ultimate goals of love are culturally constructed.
That helps us grasp why love seems so different across different times and places.
It's the key.
Okay, so let's examine how de Souza builds his case. He starts by looking at the history, right? He goes back to the classical Greeks in chapter 2.
He does, and the Greeks knew better than to rely on just one word for love. They gave us three essential forms. First, there's eros.
That's the one we all know. Passionate, erotic.
Right, the often highly idealized desire. This is the one modern culture is completely obsessed with.
Genophilia. And this is maybe the most necessary, but also the most overlooked type of love today.
I think so, yeah. This is the rational love of friendship. It's built on mutual respect, shared values. It's what Aristotle talked about. It's virtuous and it's stable.
And the third one.
And finally, agape. This is unconditional, selfless, universal love. Think of it like impartiality or just universal compassion.
And D'Souza points out a huge tension here for us in modern life, doesn't he?
A massive one. Our cultural demand for exclusive, intense eros with one person is fundamentally incompatible with the universal, impartial scope of agape.
That's a huge conflict. We expect a doctor or a judge to apply agape in their job, right?
Yeah.
An unbiased, universal concern for everyone.
Of course.
But the moment they go home, society expects them to prioritize their spouse and children completely. To apply this intense, exclusive eros and philia, we're constantly juggling these two conflicting demands.
And this brings us right to the core philosophical problem D'Souza tackles, which is the paradox of justification.
Do we have rational reasons for loving one person over another?
Exactly. This is where our intuitive idea of love just starts to break down.
Because if I tell you I love my partner because they're kind, funny, and successful, well, my love seems rational. But what happens if they lose their sense of humor?
Or if someone else shows up who is even kinder and funnier? If we love for specific, replaceable qualities, kindness, good looks, status, then that love is conditional. The person is fundamentally replaceable. It's like commodity love.
And that just doesn't feel like genuine love at all.
Not at all.
But on the other hand, if we say we love them for no reason, just because they are them, well, then the love seems arbitrary,
mm-hmm.
irrational even.
So how does D'Souza get out of this? If love can't be conditional, but it also can't be completely arbitrary, what's the third way he's proposing?
He suggests that genuine love is a commitment that operates in this unique space. It responds to the beloved's worth, but critically, it also creates value.
Ah, okay.
The commitment to that irreplaceable individual, it transcends the initial reasons. The love itself is the act of valuing, not just a passive recognition of value that's already there.
So if philosophy kind of hits a wall here, maybe we should look at what's happening underneath all that, the chemistry of it all. Let's bridge to the science.
We have to. This is a hardware D'Souza talks about in chapter 5. You have a surge of dopamine, that ecstatic rush of early attraction.
The reward pathway.
Right. And then you have oxytocin, the bonding hormone, which is crucial for long-term attachment and trust. Evolution has definitely hardwired us for this stuff.
But isn't calling it all just dopamine and oxytocin, I don't know, a bit depressing? Does D'Souza let science reduce the whole experience of, say, writing a sonnet for someone to just a chemical cocktail?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
He strongly rejects biological reductionism. He says science provides the raw materials, but it cannot provide the meaning or the subjective sublime experience.
And that meaning is entirely cultural.
Exactly. And this brings us right back to the power of the paradigm. Scenarios, how culture shapes the chemistry.
Right. So if my script tells me that real love has to be difficult and dramatic, then that dopamine rush feels incredibly meaningful.
And if my script tells me that stability equals boredom, I might sabotage a perfectly good philia-based relationship because it doesn't match the movie I have playing in my head.
That's it. Our lived experience is a constant negotiation with those scripts. And we often fall into the trap of what he calls retrospective rationalization.
Meaning?
We experience the chemical fall, the attraction, and then we create a list of perfect qualities to justify why we fell. The action comes before the philosophical reason.
Okay, let's try to synthesize these ideas into a few powerful themes. Theme one, love creates value. We touched on this, but let's look at the practical effect on our world.
Love functions as a form of emotional intelligence that completely reprioritizes your world. The beloved doesn't just enter your life.
No.
They become the center of a new shared existence, a little world of two, as D'Souza calls it.
And that explains why simple logistical decisions, where to live, how to spend money, suddenly become these huge, complicated things. Your world is no longer just yours.
Theme two, which is so vital for long-term relationships, the need for wisdom. D'Souza really emphasizes that passion alone just burns out.
And commitment alone grows cold.
Right. Love requires this delicate balance between emotional surrender and practical wisdom. If we only chase eros, we risk obsession and instability. But if we only rely on rational philia, we lose the joy.
There's a reflection here. Love without wisdom is mere infatuation. Wisdom without love is mere calculation. You need both.
Absolutely need both.
And theme three, connecting back to that little world of two, is exclusivity. Why does romantic love, the syndrome we call eros, almost always demand that we exclude others?
because the couple establishes a shared private reality, a unique history, inside jokes, shared goals, a private language.
A whole world.
A whole world. And that world is intensely valuable. And its value is defined by its exclusivity. This helps explain jealousy. It's not just about sex. It's the intense primal fear that this unique shared reality will be destroyed.
It's a defense mechanism for that shared world.
Exactly.
Let's crystallize this with a few conceptual tools people can take with them, starting with how we evaluate people we love.
Okay, key idea one. Love is an emotion that essentially involves evaluation. To love someone is to see them as in some way wonderful, though not necessarily perfect.
So it confirms love involves a judgment, but it's a subjective one. You're not saying they're objectively the best person on earth.
No. Just that they're uniquely wonderful to you.
Key idea two on that rationalization process. The lover is not looking for reasons to love, but for ways to express and justify a love that already exists.
That's the core of retrospective rationalization. We fall, and then we build the whole philosophical structure to explain why.
And key idea three on vulnerability and what he calls identity fusion.
To love someone is to be vulnerable to them in a special way, not just because they can hurt us, but because their welfare becomes partly constitutive of our own.
Love means merging identities. When you say I'm happy because they're happy, that's what he's talking about. That fusion is happening.
Exactly.
This philosophical breakdown actually offers some surprisingly practical tools for reflection. So let's talk application number one, identify your scripts.
This is maybe the most powerful tool for self-reflection in the whole book. You can use this idea of paradigm scenarios to ask yourself, what movie am I trying to live out in my relationship?
Am I measuring my stable, happy partner against some internal template I got from a dramatic novel?
Precisely. And by distinguishing between your authentic feelings and the myths you've internalized, you can make more conscious choices rather than just defaulting to what culture expects.
Application two, building resilient commitment. We can use that paradox of justification in a positive way.
How so?
By recognizing that the initial things that drew you in, the reasons, will inevitably change over time. So the key to a resilient, long-term love is shifting your focus from loving someone for their qualities to committing to the irreplaceable individual they are becoming right alongside you.
I like that. And application three, broadening your emotional portfolio. D'Souza gives us a vital reminder not to let our culture's obsession with eros dominate everything.
We need to actively cultivate philia, that stable, virtuous love of friendship, even within our romantic partnerships.
A love life based purely on intensity will probably fail. But a love life that also has deep mutual respect and shared virtue that's far more sustainable and richer.
You know, this whole deep dive shows that getting some intellectual clarity doesn't diminish the magic of love at all.
No, if anything, it elevates our appreciation for just how incredibly complex and sophisticated this whole syndrome really is.
What was the one thing that really stood out to you most?
For me, it was the realization that love is not something that just happens to us. It's a profound active practice. It's shaped by our choices, our biology, and the stories we decide to live out. It's a sophisticated form of emotional intelligence that structures our entire life.
Yeah. For me, the lasting thought is the power of the script.
Yeah.
By becoming aware of the cultural narratives that govern our emotional expectations, we gain this intellectual freedom. We can become the editor of our own love stories.
We can choose a more authentic path.
Exactly.
It lets us shift from being a passive participant to being the active author in, well, probably the most important narrative of our lives.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.